And air pollution is something we can do something about. And it is a crime that we're sitting here today in 2021 saying 8.8 million people die from air pollution. This shouldn't be happening. And may I just add, if you clean up the air, you are also solving the problem of climate change as well.
You're listening to Climate Curious, a podcast for people who care about the world but find the current conversation about climate change confusing, boring, or scary.
My name is Mariam Pasha, and I'm the director and curator at TEDx London and co-host of this podcast, along with the amazing Ben Hurst. Say hello, Ben.
Hey there, friends. I'm Ben Hurst, activist and advocate exploring what positive masculinities can look like, humble model, and climate normie. For today's episode, we wanted to give you a heads up that we're going to be talking about some pretty heavy topics, including bereavement, loss, and ill health. So if you're not in a place to listen to this today, that's completely fine. Maybe pause it and come back to it later. Otherwise, strap yourself in and get ready for another great episode.
Today, we're going to be talking about air pollution, which is a pretty big deal if you live in London or in any big city, or honestly, on this planet. We've talked about it in previous episodes about how air pollution is linked to greenhouse gases, which warm our planet and lead to runaway climate change. But air pollution is also a huge health issue. The WHO says it is the largest single environmental health crisis we face. Air pollution has been tied to 1 in 9 deaths worldwide. That's huge. That's 4.2 million deaths every year as a result of what is called ambient or outdoor air pollution. In fact, 91% of the world's population live in places where the air quality exceeds the WHO safety limits. These stats kind of blow my mind, Ben, actually, because they're wild. And yeah, anyway, let's keep going. Our guest this week is Rosamund Adu-Kissi-Debra. She is a WHO advocate for health and air. She is a Londoner and a former teacher. But before we talk to Rosamund, Ben, you're going to tell us a little bit about her daughter.
Ella Roberta was born in South London and lived in Lewisham with her mum and her two younger siblings. Before her 7th birthday in 2010, she started developing a rare and complex form of asthma. Ella was admitted to hospital 28 times over a 28-month period with life-threatening asthma attacks, including 5 spells in intensive care. Tragically, Ella died on the 15th of February, 2013. At the first inquest into Ella's untimely death in September 2014, the coroner concluded that Ella died due to a severe asthma attack followed by a seizure, which was possibly caused by an allergic reaction to something in the air. As you can imagine, her mum desperately wanted to find the answers to what that was. It was at this point that someone reached out to Rosamund, suggesting that air pollution may have affected Ella's health. And after doing a lot of digging, Rosamund found out that Ella's final hospital admission had happened on the same day as one of the worst air pollution episodes in South London, where the family had lived near the South Circular Road. Throughout her illness, Ella had been treated in 5 separate hospitals, but no medical professionals had ever explained that air pollution could be making her asthma worse. As Rosamund learned more about air pollution, she started to campaign for a new inquest for Ella. And Rosamund, I want to welcome you first of all to the podcast. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. It's an absolute privilege for us to have you here on the show. And to start off, I wanted to ask why it was so important to have a new inquest for Ella.
Hello, listeners, and good afternoon from London. I think for me, the reason why I had a second inquest, actually, we didn't decide straight away whether it was going to be an inquest or a public inquiry. But after the first inquest, one of the things that came out that said her triggers were something to do with something in the air. And that's what they concluded. And I had a child death review. And I remember the doctor at the time at the child death review was saying, something in the air could be anything, really. He said to me, look, if you find or if new information comes up, we will reopen the child death review again.
And you said that that you found new evidence, right? And that's like, that's so ambiguous, like something in the air, like you say, could literally be anything. And there is no way of knowing what that means, whether that means like you need to move, whether that means like there's like air poisoning or whatever it might be. So I'm interested to know like what it was that you found in the new inquest. What were those new pieces of evidence that you discovered?
Well, let's start off from the child death review. I put something in my local newspaper, just really appealing whether anyone could help me get to the bottom of why she might have died. Now, some people might have said, well, she had asthma, full stop, i.e. end of. But as a teacher, I thought, do you really get a child who is incredibly healthy suddenly, out of the blue, become that severe? But I was open to, by the way, not finding out. And I remember the question they asked me, had I looked at the levels of air pollution in my neighbourhood the night before she passed away? And I've got to be honest, goodness me, I hope he's not listening to this. I thought, oh, not another crankpot. Because people had come up with all sorts of theories, from her diet to is she allergic to this, to that. So when I got this information, you know how you talk to your friends about it. And she saw, I don't know where she saw this advert or something. And my lawyer was asking for people who believed they had been affected by air pollution to come forward. And I can remember going up to Euston, walking into this like amazing massive office, my first thing was, I ain't got any money to be hiring a lawyer from here. That was my sort of thing. And no, seriously. And I can remember going in, do you know what, I'm just laughing because my beginning pitch wasn't great. That I was like, I think I've got something, i.e. what you are looking for. I've got no money, I'm not going to sell my house, but I think I have what you need. And that's how we kind of started. I mean, my beginning pitch was not great. And I think she kind of must have smiled at me. But I think what happened was, she was a genius that put together, who came up with the idea of looking at when Ella went into hospital and what was going on pollution-wise on the day she was going to hospital. That was definitely her idea. And it just so happened that on days, this is why I'm always very careful when people say, would you advise other people to take action, etc., etc., etc. Now, we were lucky because most of her hospital admissions correlated on high air pollution days. So that made the case stronger. So when we had enough evidence, it was then we had to find an expert to back up what we were saying. Because what we were asking the Attorney General to do, which is very, very rare, is quash the first inquest and ask for a new one. So you need quite a lot of evidence to do that. And Attorney General is not just going to quash an inquest because he feels sorry for me or because my daughter has died. He would need to do it because he believes there is sufficient evidence to win or the evidence we are bringing is going to stand up in court again. This is what people don't understand. So rare for anyone to quash an inquest. So what people need to understand is, we had to have overwhelming evidence to prove, and also that the new evidence would stand up in court and someone wasn't just going to come and just rubbish it. And do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it all sounds really easy now, but it absolutely wasn't. Why did I do it? I did it because as her mother, I did want to know ultimately why she died. Why did she become so ill? She did have siblings, and obviously they wanted to know. She had friends, because it was basically she went home for a half term and then she came back to school, and then she had this uncontrollable asthma. So within a week, she kind of left school before October half term. She was okay. She came back. And from that moment on, till she died, it was hell on earth, basically. And there just had to be some explanation. But guess what, Ben? I did also accept that in life, sometimes, there are no answers. You have to accept that. So I wasn't going in thinking, yay, I'm going to win.
Yeah, and that's huge, right? Like, just so, this idea of, mean? Like, this thing doesn't exist to provide me with answers or with the answers to the questions that I'm asking. And then to go through that process and get to the end of it and not have the answers, and then to do it again. Also with the understanding that, like, maybe there will be no answers.
Yeah. You have to be prepared. So part of me was mentally, I mean, I spent, when Ella died in 2013, I don't think I met my lawyer maybe to 2015 or 16. I can't remember. I spent the first 2 years recovering. I couldn't walk. My friend, you know, grief for me was a very physical thing. And yeah, I literally couldn't walk for quite a while. My friend reminded me the other day, remember when you used to walk with a walking stick? That's how debilitating Ella's passing, it kind of really hit me physically. So it was as if you'd been stabbed by her knife, but the knife was invisible. So that's how it kind of felt. And for a long time, I didn't know I was going to recover. But I think the mind is an amazing thing. And it makes you, and that's why I'm very careful when I do interviews now, not to divulge too much in detail about her illness, what happened. Because sometimes you can open these things that you can't control. And it's taken me a long, 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 long time. I mean, coming up to 8.5 years to get here now to talk to people. Ella didn't just die yesterday. It's taking me. So for a long time, I wasn't in the public domain, even when we were putting the case together. So we actually made a conscious decision when we were ready to go and speak to the media. And by then I was ready, and we needed to get the public involved because it was severely political as well.
I really want us to talk about that learning that you had and the global perspective. I just, before we get to that, I'm just wondering whether you could tell us a little bit about what the inquest did actually find and what the recommendations were from that.
Yeah, what the inquest found was it was the illegal levels of air pollution that actually started her asthma. So not only did it start it, it obviously brought the premature ending to her life. So what that in effect means is, without the illegal levels of air pollution, she would still be here now. So, and that then explained to me why, when I went into court in September 2014, when the pathologist was describing the state of her lungs, why they were so bad, that she looked as if she'd been smoking. And I remember looking at her consultant, looking a bit puzzled, that i.e. when we used to put up her x-rays, we didn't see her lungs were that bad. So ultimately, we didn't really know the state of her body until she died and there was a post-mortem. So what the coroner then did is he looked at all the evidence, and one of his tasks is to come to a conclusion about why my daughter died. But he also had a responsibility to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else in the future. This is part of the coroner's powers. So one of the things he couldn't have had many more recommendations, but I think you have to narrow it down. And what is best that's going to help everybody. So what he said is, for the minimum requirement. So this is what, and this is really important. He said minimum should be WHO limits, because throughout Ella's life, where we lived, there were illegal levels of air pollution everywhere. So we focus on the South Circular because that's where we live. And obviously from when she got home to from school to overnight, that would have been where majority of the time was spent. But in general, it was everywhere. And also she spent majority, apart from obviously, you know, summer holidays when you go away. Apart from that, she was literally in different parts of Lewisham all the time. Now, the other thing he also, the second recommendation was about monitoring. And this is my big thing, monitoring and raising awareness. So throughout the inquest, the coroner realized that, for example, there might be apps there about air pollution and all different things, but nobody knows about them. So raising awareness is a key, and the public need to be told about air pollution. Now, how do the public get told? You need to monitor it, because this thing is invisible. So boroughs everywhere, countries everywhere should be monitoring air pollution and demonstrating to their citizens that, look, this is what you are breathing in and this is damaging your health. Now, the problem, how I see it, to just quickly talk about the second one, is if you monitor it, you then have got the evidence in front of you, haven't you? So they're in a catch-22, really. And sometimes I do wonder, is the lack of monitoring to do with institutions don't want to take responsibility? Because the moment people know what they're breathing in, you show it to them.
Rightfully
not so. Everyone, but a lot of people are going to be outraged. And then the third...
I think that's absolutely right.
Yeah, and then the third and last recommendation he made, which is incredibly important, was that the medical profession needed to upskill itself, because we were under 5 hospitals. We'd gone in almost about 30 times and no one has raised air pollution. Well, we now know when there's a spike in air pollution, people have cardiac arrest and asthma attacks. So it really wouldn't matter how well she was taking her medicine. It was never going to work. And that's what she used to say when I used to call the ambulance. She used to go, "Mom, my medicine isn't working." And she was right. But those are the three recommendations: the WHO limits, the monitoring and raising awareness, and the education of the medical professions going forward. And this will form the basis of Ella's law in future. But I do think if these three things are implemented all across the world, not just in the UK, we will get somewhere. But the fight now is to get these things implemented. It is easier said than done.
Because even when you were saying before about the second inquest, I was thinking, how do you monitor pollution? Like, are there ways that people do that? And obviously there are, because they've done it in this case, right? They've done it in this scenario.
So what they're even reading is different. And also it depends where these monitors are. So my message to people is, if you can, going forward, I would like people to have personal monitors on them, whether you've got it on your rucksack or wherever. We think this is going to be a game changer. What the damage is individual exposure to what they're breathing in. So what I took away from the inquest is, it is to do with our exposure to air pollution. That's what the key is. You know, when you're on that road, how close are you to that vehicle, and what are you breathing in? And that is why the actual younger you are, because if you're in a pram, you're going to be at the tailpipe level. So a kind of 6'5" person isn't going to be breathing in the same amount of pollution that a baby in a pram is. And also people need to remember, children breathe faster, don't they? Quicker. You know, children's lungs, or our lungs, they are not experiments to see how long we can take pollution for. This is what people need to understand.
Yeah.
Every single minute, every day, damage is being done. And that's what happened to Ella. Do I think Ella just breathed in fumes one day? No. I think it was over a period of time. So my advice to people, my advice to pregnant women would be, if you could avoid main roads and traffic, do it. Because they found particulate matters on the placenta. Yeah.
And we're talking about each individual's journey to school or their journey to work, or like literally, like you said, which roads they're walking down. Are you going on a main road? And I guess this all fits into a bigger picture of the necessary changes in climate action, like whether it's like electric cars or whatever it might be. Like we've got a...
It absolutely does. So if you look at data in the UK, what you would generally find is asthma affects 1.1 million children. But in the main, those children will be living closer to busy roads. That is not to say there are children who don't live near busy roads. Mm. There are children, for instance, who live in the countryside who have asthma. That might be due to the ammonia that maybe people use in farming. Or one of the things we have discovered is wood burning is a huge pollutant as well. So you could be, in quotes, live in a leafy area and you could have a wood burner. That's not going to be... But for the general person who doesn't have all these things, who lives near a busy road, they are the people who are more likely going to have asthma. And we know in society, we all do, let's not pretend, the closer you are to a busy road, we know the properties are cheaper. Mm. So that is where the poorer communities are going to live. This isn't controversial. Inequality in health has been around forever. It's just now when I mention it, people just start throwing their toys out of the pram. You know, take a seat, people, and calm down. You know, this has long been established. I'm sorry, oh God, this is going to go out. My kids are going to go, Mom, you said that word, take a seat.
Don't apologize for it.
Apologize to your listeners.
Because it, for me, it raises a really important point. You say that these things are not controversial and they're not like shocking and they're almost common sense.
But people need to understand though, people from poorer communities, people from ethnic minority backgrounds, we care about our health. Just because we're not part of the movement,
massive point,
doesn't mean we don't care. But we have other pressures. So may I stress this? It's not that we don't care. And also, people feel beaten down by the system. People feel they are not heard. So people's attitude is sometimes we're not going to make a fuss because it's not going to make a difference. Not that they don't care. Mm-hmm. They don't think it's going to make a difference. And that is, you know, when I started, there's still very few people who look like me in the movement. I am very grateful that I've managed to get to where I have got now. But it literally took my daughter's case and her death for people to listen to me. So we're definitely not on an equal footing. Let's not get carried away. You know, because what I have achieved is historic, it's a landmark. And it took me to get to that level before some doors were open to me. See how I say some doors, not all doors, but some doors. So we need to, people shouldn't see me and think diversity. No.
That's not diversity.
Yeah, one person is just, you know, doesn't show that diversity is possible.
No, I'm doing my bit, but we you know, to bring it back down to the ground level, those affected are, those that are most affected are from poorer communities, but they have other pressures. Look, they're not now going to be going out campaigning when some of them are isolating, even with COVID, because the same people who are most affected by air pollution are probably the same people who are most affected by COVID, this whole sort of low traffic neighborhood. And one of the narratives, which is really interesting, is that traffic belongs on the main road. Who has come up with that narrative that this is where traffic belongs? when we all know these aren't the people who are creating the air pollution. Then everyone then jumps on it. Yeah, this is where traffic belongs. Did you ask those people that they want those traffic?
No, they're invisible. That's the point, right?
No, but did you ask them? No, you didn't. So now, us in the community or the movement, we know the dangers now, don't we? Let's not pretend. We now know the dangers of air pollution. And what's one of our solutions? Let's dump them on the poorer communities. And I'm never going to think that's okay. We all want clean air. All our lives matter. But it seems some are more equal than others. And this cannot be acceptable. And we shouldn't be shocked now that the gap in inequality in health is getting wider between the poor and the rich. Well, air pollution will be a huge contributory factor. I'm not saying it's the be all and end all, but it is a contributory factor because we know it leads to all these illnesses.
Can let me ask you a question, because you mentioned it earlier and I'd love to find out more about this. You said, and I wonder if this is, because you've had this kind of verdict, right? And you've gone on this kind of incredible journey, both as an advocate and as like a scientist and, you know, as someone who's trying to, I see you as someone who's trying to create a world when this doesn't ever happen again. And I want to know what, you know, you mentioned this idea of Ella's Law, and I wanted to know whether you could tell us more about that and whether that's the next piece that you're working on.
So Ella's Law will be a combination and of what the coroner came to, the WHO limits. It will be about monitoring, because I think that's where we go, raising awareness. And I don't think it's going to include the medical professions, because can I be honest, they've actually started the process of educating themselves. And as I go along, I will decide what the third thing needs to be. But these are things to stand on, and it will be something for me to stand on worldwide, because I believe all countries should be adopting Ella's Law, i.e. WHO limits, and the new ones are coming soon. I believe all countries should be doing monitoring, and I believe all countries should be raising awareness of the impact of this on their citizens. My only point to people who say the air is cleaner than ever, why is it then 8.8 million people are dying every year from contributing to it? Air pollution is the biggest environmental disaster right now. And it is really, I keep on trying to make the invisible visible. That's what I keep on trying, because it seems that unless people can see things, they don't believe it. Very much like religion. You believe in God, where's God? That's just a sidetrack. But it's very similar, you know, and different people have different things in their country, but we all have governments. So it starts from that, and then it filters down. And we as citizens, we also need to do our bit. We can't solve it all by ourselves, because, you know, it's when we come to burning of fossil fuel, we all know, you know, it's governments who are pushing all these agendas, and it's about money. But we also, as individuals, what I don't like is a lot of focus is on us as individuals and not government. I believe there is only so much we can change. A lot of it needs to come from them. That's just how I feel about it. You can give up meat, you can give up your car, you're just one person. So it really needs to, and governments need to lead on this. Governments need to show us the way to go. People feel powerless. You can see an advert on about cars every night on the radio, on the television. Where's the public health warning about air pollution? So it is not a level playing field at all, no.
Like you said, governments have a duty to protect us, and they have to live up to that.
They do, absolutely. But I'm just starting it, and there will be other people along the way. I think when you talk about air pollution, I think people need to focus on health rather than the environment all the time. And why do I say that? Because everyone cares about their health, the health of their family. So people need to see this as a health thing. And I hope Ella's legacy will be that she started us on this journey. And we hope at the end of it, the air will be cleaner. We hope one day those 8.8 million people will be zero. That's a dream. So can you see, to get from 8.8 million to zero will take a long time. And yeah, I didn't realize how political it was, how much it involves money. Yeah, and sometimes I feel I'm a mum who lost a child who's just got caught up in the whole thing. But ultimately what I want is, I don't want clean air for some, I want clean air for all. Ella is a canary in the coal mine.
What an amazing legacy to have left and to continue to leave. So important. Yeah,
I'm incredibly proud of her for someone so young. I mean, she knew she was going to go into the medical books because her asthma was so awful and they told her. But it would take me a long time to, yeah, accept that the daughter that I gave birth to, she is really eventually going to be responsible for saving many lives. And I think I'm more comfortable now that the air pollution movement have their poster girl. It took a while because she'll always be my firstborn and my daughter. But if by them adopting her and what she went through, if it will educate people, people can relate to her, then yeah, I'm quite happy for her to do that, to do her bit. Well, she ticks all the boxes, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She's female, diversity, everything. It's something that I have to, yeah, it's just an overwhelming feeling that there's especially a picture of her, and people tell me, when you show this picture now to different people in different countries, they know who she is.
So I think, Rosamund, I actually think this is a lovely place to wrap up our conversation with the legacy that Ella's going to leave for all of us and the lives that she will be saving. And I think it's really important, all of these different things that you've pointed out, that are, that it's not just about it being like a symbol, but you know, the impact it's had on you and your family. And we just want to say thank you so much for coming to talk about this.
No, thank you for thank you for having me. And what people need to understand is they see the picture of, you know, this amazing, beautiful child. But when I said she went into ICU 5 times, I think we now more have a knowledge more about ICU. She did suffer incredibly, and nobody deserves to suffer that much. And there are solutions to air pollution, and air pollution is something we can do something about. And it is a crime that we're sitting here today in 2021 saying 8.8 million people die from air pollution. This shouldn't be happening. And may I just add, if you clean up the air, you are also solving the problem of climate change as well. That's what people need to understand. If you clean up the air, part of the solution of climate change. You won't be able to get your solutions to climate change if the air is filthy and dirty. So that's what people need to. And thank you for allowing me to share a story. Thank you to your listeners. Who are kindly going to listen in, and please continue to spread the word and hold your governments to account.
Thank you so much. We're not done yet though. We've got one last little section.
And now it's time for our climate confessions. Let's fess up to the bad habits we just can't kick.
So I'm interested to know if you have any climate confessions for us today, if there's anything that you want to get off your chest that you want to share with us.
Oh, God, yeah. Flying. My thing is definitely going to be flying. What I do, sometimes you do need to have a connection and you do need to see people's eyes and people's faces. And there are many things that can be done on Zoom and things like that. So for me, it will be weighing up in future. I'd be absolutely lying if I said to you, I'm not going to be, and I never did fly all over the place because I didn't have any money. But where I go to, I would want it to be so impactful. I would want to think about it. If it's like a meeting I can do over Zoom, then I wouldn't even get on transport even and go and do that. Yeah, my life is full of conflicts. So every time I get on a plane to go somewhere, I probably still feel really, really guilty about. And I generally like to travel, you know, from a teacher, is exploring different countries and different things, but there you are. We need to just cut down on, but guess what? Because I am human and because I'm not perfect, I do my bit, but I am aware and I do the best I actually can. Mm-hmm. I don't set myself up to be super human or something like that.
Rosamund, I'm going to tell you my confession for this week.
Yeah.
Is related to the flying thing that you were saying. And it's kind of a future confession, I guess. It's to say that as soon as they let me out of this country, I am getting on a plane. Mm. Like, I am desperate to go somewhere. I spent my whole life traveling. I right. have never felt so hemmed in as I have for the last year and a half. So I'm confessing now for future bad behavior, which is that I want to
it's
take
really hard, isn't it? If you really enjoy visiting other countries, getting engrossed in their cultures, learning about other people. Yeah. And the UK is fabulous. There are many things to see here, but you do want to experience.
Yeah, I want to taste and see and hear something different. But that is my future confession. Ben, do you have one?
I feel like I'm going, oh no, I did have seafood this week and I didn't think about where it came from, which is literally what I was speaking about last week not doing. So gotcha. That is something that I could do better of, because I've had squid multiple times this week and I didn't consider.
Multiple. That's listeners, not even meant. Once. Multiple.
I'm close.
From the guy who's climate perfect.
No. Okay, well, I'm gonna do better.
Multiple. Not even once. Mariam, we could have let him off if it was once.
I know, we could have let him off if multiple. Once, but not multiple. Well, Ben, you've got a whole, you've got to improve. We know that. Rosamund, we're just going to say thank you to you again for coming and having this conversation.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. We really hope you enjoyed this episode.
If you did, please rate, subscribe and share this episode with a curious friend. It makes us possible to keep making this amazing content for you.
Oh, and slide into our DMs at TEDx London and let us know which climate extraordinaires you'd love to hear from next time. Oh, and don't leave yet. We wanted to tell you a bit more about who made this podcast possible.
Yeah, we did. TEDx London's headline partner, City, has been supporting us for the past 5 years to bring world-changing ideas to the TEDx London stage. And now they're taking it to the next level by making this podcast possible. Thanks, City.
But wait, that is not all.
No, this podcast was produced by the amazing Josie Coulter.
Curation and research by the genius Tara Cooper.
Artwork designed by the visionaries that are Sabrina Russo and Rebecca Mingus.
Mixed and engineered by the iconic Ben Beheshti, aka The Falcon, who also composed our banging theme tune.
Presented by me, Mariam Pasha.
And by me, Ben Hurst. Stay curious.